anarchist organization flourished in Spain during the Spanish Civil War. However, the movement was not free of internal contradictions. Despite the organization's ideals of freedom and equality, women still found themselves at the bottom of a hierarchy, second to their male comrades. In response to these inconsistencies, the Mujeres Libres formed. On May 2nd, Martha Acklesberg spoke on this inspirational group of women as part of the Montreal Anarchist Festival.
Members of Mujeres Libres pointed out to me in one way after another, and this was really what was the basis for the organization, that no matter how radical the compañeros were when they were out at their union meetings or even at the storefront schools and cultural centers, when they came back home or when they were at those meetings, they didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the women. They would laugh at them when they tried to speak. They would sexually harass them. They just wouldn't take them serious.
Do you live in a town where women are relegated to a position of insignificance, dedicated exclusively to housework and the care of children? No doubt many times you have thought about this with some disgust, and when you've noticed the freedom which your brothers or the men of your household enjoy, you have felt the hardship of being a woman.
These young women, most of them were between the ages of 16 and 20 when the war broke out, and they decided they needed to do something. Mujeres Libres was founded by Mercedes Coma Posada, who was a journalist living in Madrid, Lucia Sanchez Sornil, who was also in Madrid, Amparo Po, who was a doctor, actually living in Barcelona, and most of the rest of the people, working class, predominantly textile worker, women who were working in the textile industries, to try to deal with what they recognized as the specific subordination of working class women within capitalism, and to try to work within the movement to create an atmosphere that would take women, their lives, their experiences, their hopes, seriously. Spain was a very, very traditional society. Most women in Spain rarely were able to go outside of their houses, except to shop, without being accompanied by or chaperoned by a male. They were very ignorant about their bodies, sexuality, all of this, and that Mujeres Libres felt that all of these things they were going to have to address if women were really going to be able, if they were really going to be able to take their place as women, as equals in the revolutionary movement. They also felt that autonomy was necessary because only if women were responsible for their own organization, including publishing their own magazine. They published a wonderful magazine called Mujeres Libres over the course of these 3 years. Could they take responsibility for themselves? Could they learn how to do all these things, putting on an anarchist book fair or publishing a magazine or driving a bus or all the things that you have to do in order to be a fully active and engaged member of an organization? And also, they wanted to have their own organization so that the men could see that women organized on their own, in fact, could do something, that they weren't incompetent. And the only way they felt that the men would know that was if they could see them actually doing these things without men telling them what and how to do all the time. So they developed really a whole set of programs with two separate but related goals. One was in Spanish as capacitación, which empowerment. It's kind of like empowerment, but it's not exactly empowerment, but it's helping people to become aware and fully develop their own capacities, really. Another way of thinking about that was this whole, all these processes of preparation for engagement in the revolution. And the second component, in addition to capacitación, was captación, which meant mobilizing women into the anarcho-syndicalist or the sort of what was called the libertarian movement.
Well, against all which you've had to suffer comes Mujeres Libres. We want you to have the same freedom as your brothers. We want your voice to be heard with the same authority as your father's. We want you to attain, without worrying about what people will say, that independent life which you have wanted.
Capacitación, this process of preparation or empowerment, I think is best understood to refer to the content of the activities of the organization. And there were many of them. It's really astounding what they were able to do with very, very few resources in the middle of a civil war. Activities designed to overcome women's illiteracy and to prepare them to participate actively and effectively workforce. They went to factories, they would hold meetings before union meetings so that women who were in the unions could get used to hearing their voices in public and would be willing to speak up then when they were in mixed-sex groups. They had courses teaching people how to read and write, as I mentioned before. They had courses teaching women how to be tram drivers and to do other and to do agricultural work, which they had never been allowed to do before. They had courses, they mounted radio programs. They had programs to help people develop capacities to engage in public speaking so that when anarchist groups went around the country during the Civil War to kind of mobilize support, there would be able to be women on the podium as well so that people could see women as public speakers. And they provided them with information about childcare, motherhood, and sexuality and birth control. Again, all of which was pretty revolutionary in the Spanish context. Mujeres Libres became increasingly concerned, in addition to this capacitación, with captación, with trying to do what it could to support anarchist movement organizations and bring women into them. Now, within this context, Mujeres Libres rejected both feminism. It never defined itself as a feminist organization and, in fact, rejected the label of feminism because they understood that to mean striving for equality for women within an existing system of privileges, and they didn't want to have anything to do with that existing system of privileges. They also thought, as it still does, I guess, sometimes people think feminist means you're anti-male, and they were not anti-male. They were trying to work with men. They just were trying to get the men to take them seriously. So they never quite accepted this label of feminist. And at the same time, they were struggling to reject a secondary position within that anarchist movement. So they were trying to walk this very fine line. As they wrote in one of their dispatches to the movement, "We are aware of the precedent set by both feminist organizations and by political parties. We could not follow either of these paths. We could not separate the women's problem from the social problem, nor could we deny the significance of the first, the women's problem, by converting women into a simple instrument for any organization, even our own libertarian organization. The intention that underlay our activities was much broader, to serve a doctrine, not a party, to empower women, to make of them individuals capable of contributing to the structuring of the future society. Individuals who have learned to be self-determining, not to follow blindly the dictates of any organization." So this was the reason why organizational autonomy, a separate organization for women, was very important to them. They believed that only through their own self-directed action could women come to see themselves as capable and competent, able to participate as equals in the movement, and would the men then also be able to see them as capable and competent. As Lucia Sanchez O'Neill had written as early as 1935, "It's not up to him, the male anarchist, to establish the functions of a woman in society, however elevated or highfalutin he might think they were. The anarchist way is to allow the woman to act herself to achieve her freedom without tutorials or pressures in any direction, that she should be able to move in the direction that she feels she needs to go." They expressed this position over and over again. Over the course of many years, tried to make clear through the programs that they were organizing that they were certainly not opposed to or in opposition to the anarcho-syndicalist movement in any way. Rather, they were trying to encourage women to join it. But they never quite succeeded in getting the kind of recognition from the larger movement that they expected or hoped for, and never, I think, quite convinced the majority, anyway, of men in most of these organizations that they weren't somehow engaged in activities that were undermining the unity of the movement. And I think anybody who's been involved in left organizations is quite aware of this phenomenon. It hardly was a problem only in the 30s. The men simply could not understand why there had to be a separate organization for women. You know, they said, we don't have an organization for men. Why do you need one for women? And no matter how many times they tried to explain this process of capacitación and the different situation of women, it was really very, very hard. They did get some support from movement organizations. Many of the local unions supported local chapters of Mujeres Libres. There were men who wrote for the magazine occasionally, although they didn't want to take much in the way of help from men because they wanted it to be clear that it was women who were running the magazine. And there were men in the larger anarchist organization who supported the efforts of Mujeres Libres to be sort of included within the larger domain of the anarcho-syndicalist front, we could call it. The clearest example of from the point of view of Mujeres Libres was the incomplete acceptance of the organization as an anarchist organization took place in October 1938. There was a major plenary conference of all of the anarchist and anarcho-syndicalist organizations and movements in Spain that took place in Barcelona. And it was called by the three groups who were the three main organizations, the CNT, the Confederación Nacional de Trabajo, the National Confederation of Labor, the Juventudes Libertarias, the anarchist youth organization, because they were aware that they needed a separate organization for young people, and the FAI, the Federación Anarquista Ibérica, the anarchist movement. And Mujeres Libres asked to come to that and to be recognized as the fourth arm of the movement, which they thought was completely obvious. They asked to receive an invitation, and they didn't get it, so they went anyway, and they sent a formal delegation of 15 women seeking formal accreditation and recognition of Mujeres Libres as a constituent organization of the movement. There was a long debate, at the end of which the assembly agreed that the women from Mujeres Libres as Mujeres Libres could not attend this gathering, except at that point that the question of their recognition as an organization was being discussed. So first of all, that from the point of view of the women, of course, marginalized them completely from the Congress.
The Mujeres Libres organization ended with Franco's victory of the Spanish Civil War, when the anarchist movement was disbanded and forced underground.
And although its articulation of this project distinguished it from most other women's organizations of the time, I haven't found another one that was able to articulate this dilemma and to try to pose a way through it as effectively as Mujeres Libres did. It was unfortunately no more able than many of them, and I have to say many contemporary organizations, to bring fully into reality an autonomous organization of women operating within that larger movement context.
But realize that all this requires your effort, that these things don't come for nothing, and that, in order to achieve them, you need the assistance of others. You need others to be concerned with the same things as you are. You need to help them as they will help you. In a single word, you must struggle communally, which is the same as saying you must create a group, an agrupación of women.
Y la mete en una cena. Esta comida la llama comida de merengena.